can firmly say that I've never drank alcohol before 11 a.m. Actually, no, never mind. Yesterday, that doesn't count. Hello, humans. Welcome to Audio Face, episode 130. I am Sean. And he is Dan, an alcoholic. Today, we've got quick little episode for you guys because there's just two albums that we're going to review. We have The Slow Rush by Tame Impala and Baby Gravy 2 by Yun Gravy. Yun Gravy spelled Y-U-N-G, not Yun, Y-O-U-N-G, because, you know, everybody's name is Yun.
And BB no dollar sign, for Baby No Money, just so you know. Oh, you actually forgot about the most important album to come out this year. This month, Justin Bieber's new album.
We're not fucking talking about that.
We didn't even do a "so you didn't have to" because like we're not even gonna.
We listened to 10 seconds. Like this is not worth it. That's.
No, I listened to 10 seconds of it in traffic while it was buffering, and I couldn't do it. It wasn't even worth the buffering.
No, it wasn't worth the buffering.
But yeah, so, this is an irreverent podcast about the music culture. Yeah. Mostly matters if you haven't heard, haven't figured out yet.
Yeah, we said that like 1,000 times.
And later in the show, we're gonna be talking about. Rage Against the Machine versus Scalpers. That was a big news this week.
Yeah.
We have a little bit on Snoop Dogg's ongoing battle with Gayle King, which may come to an end. And our festival's too dude focused. The answer is yes, but we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah. Well, we have a single from Billie Eilish, which is interesting. It's No Time to Die. It's actually for the upcoming Bond film that's coming out in April, I believe.
Yeah. Billie Eilish got to make this time's Bond song,
which is. Interesting, because I wouldn't expect her to get a Bond song. It's good though, because you can really hear her sing in the track. Because I know she gets a lot of criticism of people that she's like, oh, she doesn't sing, she just talks. I'm like, well, you like rap, right? Yeah. I'm like, well, what the fuck do you think they do, idiot? You fucking moron. But anyways, it's good. It's cool to hear her sing though, and really get to explore her voice a little bit more. Because usually, even in a couple of great tracks of hers, you can only get little snippets of her singing and really get to hear her voice a little bit more in order Time to Die. And it's not. I wouldn't say a normal Billie Eilish, but it definitely fits a Bond film.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't think her like fitting into a Bond film, but now it shows that she has kind of a range of not just being experimental and weird, which I prefer, but also going into more of a mainstream thing and doing different things outside of what she does, what she's known for.
Yeah, so cool. The song itself is kind of about like betrayal and expecting something to happen, but like getting blindsided the other way, which is about a lot of Bond films are naturally about the idea of betrayal, obviously leaning towards love to make it a little bit more universal, but... Yeah, it's her soft voice. It kind of builds. It starts the soft, mostly piano thing with little riffs here and there. And then towards the middle, latter half of the song, it sort of builds up and crescendos into this really beautiful sort of thing that really brings the piece together, makes it feel emotional. It still has that Billie Eilish kind of character feel where it makes a lot with a little. It's very maximum minimalist music. But in doing that, it kind of shows the prettiest parts that like music can do on its own. So it's really nice. So if you haven't listened to the Tame Impala bonus episode, what are you doing? You should probably pause this right now and go listen to that because we're going to review Tame Impala in a couple of minutes. And it's like 22 minutes and it's all you need to know about Tame Impala up to, the part where we review his newest album, which is happening in a moment. And next week, watch out because we're going to be releasing our Caribou bonus episode.
She's going to go hard.
Yeah, or like next week, like in 2 weeks, we're going to record our Caribou bonus episode and release it on that Thursday because Caribou's new album is going to be coming out on the 28th of February. And so we'll be reviewing that on March 2nd or so.
Yes.
Tycho's got a new album coming out soon. Apparently Grimes is coming out with one too. Ozzy Osbourne as we round out the month of February.
There's a lot in February.
There's a 1975 sized hole in it, but we'll get to that in April-ish. Oh,
Don't remind me.
Yes,
they're releasing going to release more music though.
So and I'll plug during the first part of the episode. Be sure to follow Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram to follow the show and interact with the show. And if there are albums that you think we've missed that you want us to catch, because I have a little list of albums we've missed that we'll catch up to eventually, but add on to that list by interacting with us. and it'll be cool. Okay, I'm done derailing you, Sean. Keep going.
Yeah, so Snoop Dogg, we talked about this last week of him going after Gayle Keane and stuff because of yelling about Kobe's alleged sexual assault. And we talked about this with, it doesn't matter who, like,
it
who
doesn't...
you are, whatever you it is. You call out people for the dumb shit they do, for exactly. the bad shit they do. We've been a broken record about this, but anyways, Snoop Dogg...
We're a broken record about this because in a lot of other parts in the media...
They don't. Exactly. But Snoop Dogg now apologizes to Gayle Keane after a talk with his mom, which is hilarious. I can just imagine Snoop Dogg's mom coming, holding his braids by her left hand and just smacking the dog shit out of him in her right hand.
Like one of them old-fashioned like black mama ass whoopings where every three words has another like pop to the head.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's one that's good.
You must have lost your goddamn mind. Yeah, exactly.
If you know, you know, all right?
Yeah.
In an Instagram post captioned, had a talk with my mama. Thank you, mama. The rapper talked about the whole King thing.
This is like one of those dudes. This is like in Facebook in 2010 when you're in middle school and you get caught being drunk and you have to apologize to your entire Facebook friends and everybody yells at you about it, but your mom made you do it. Or else you wouldn't get the new PlayStation 3. That's pretty much what happened. That's like, this is the rockstar equivalent of this.
This is amazing.
The rap star equivalent of this. Hilarious.
Snoop said, two wrongs don't make a right. When you're wrong, you gotta fix it. So that being said, Gayle King, I publicly tore you down by coming at you at a derogatory manner based off of emotions, mm-hmm. me being angry at the questions you asked. Of course, the questions in reference being the things that Gayle King asked in a 2002 interview to a WNBA yes. star in regards to the allegations of sexual assault
and shit that Kobe
on Kobe
did.
Bryant, allegedly, most likely did. this came after Snoop Dogg came really hot at Gayle King and Oprah and all this stuff, and he's apologizing. And so there's not, in the same type of media that does viciously call out this kind of like misbehavior by people and like criticize it, I would also critique it in saying there isn't enough room for people who like genuinely messed up and owned up to it and apologized. And so Snoop Dogg seems to be kind of doing that. Whether his mom forced him to or not is kind of a different matter.
I mean,
he needs
to talk on XXXTentacion next, and then I'll give him a pass.
But yeah, he never really, like, super endorsed nor, like, denied him, so, like, we can go.
He switched on him. But now we're going to move on to our first album review of the day, and I'm surprised that this is the first album review, but we have The Slow Rush by Tame Impala, 12 songs, 57 minutes long. This is
very good album. It's a very good
borderline
album.
Perfect on the Sean scale.
No pun intended.
Of yes, you fucking derailed me again. This is one of my favorite albums to come out in the past about 5 years or so. Five, 6 years.
I can largely agree with that.
This is insanely good. It is from top to bottom. It is okay. You guys always knew that the other thing I do. I listen to album full, complete, and then if I really like it, I listen to it complete again, and then I put it on shuffle. I did that about 45,000 times, and I listened to it every time.
What did you do with that you similarly did with another band you
liked?
And
then I was going to say, but the only thing was that I different about this album is the same thing I did with Arctic Monkeys, with Star Treatment, the opening track on the album. It was
Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino.
Yes, exactly. I listened to that song on repeat about 15 times before I had to continue with the album because of how much I like that song. I think it was my second most listened to song in that year behind Love If You Made It, but there's a reason that song won. But in 2020, it was one more year, the opening track of The Slow Rush from Tame Impala that I listened to about 25 times in a row of just me sitting here like, oh my God, this song is beautiful. Has this really weird effect where it's just a chanting thing where Kevin put it on to a synthesizer and fucked with it, and it's just saying one more year, but it's super distorted. It goes back and forth between your ears, and then a drum line kicks in, a bass kicks in, and it is beautiful. It's like one of those introspective pieces where you're by yourself, to me, I'm floating in the International Space Station, just looking out at the...
Casually,
just be like, there's Earth. It's definitely round, flat earthers. It's definitely got some curvature there.
Or at the very least, I'll concede that the flat earth is a circle.
It's a circle.
Exactly. I'll never say whether or not that circle has depth or not, but it's a circle.
We are the inside of the earth now. And just one of those pieces where it just really completely sucked me into the album immediately. I had to listen to that song on repeat. Then I get through the rest of it, and it is awesome. Instant Destiny, very good song. Borderline is a bit different on the album than it is on the singles version. It's about 30 seconds shorter, and I actually like this version a lot more than I do the single version, because it feels like the single version was a little bit long and it was chopped up, but I guess Kevin was saying that he was remixing it all the time and doing stuff, so this feels like a remixed complete version of Borderline compared to when he released it over a year ago at this point. Posthumous Forgiveness is great right after that, which was another single that was released. Breathe Deeper, holy shit.
Breathe Deeper, holy shit.
That's a track too.
So
is ridiculously good.
Once you get into Breathe Deeper, which wasn't a pre-release single, mm-mm, correct?
Nope.
Yeah, so this is one that Tame Impala was rightfully keeping a surprise.
Yeah.
Breathe Deeper kind of gets you into the ethos of the Slow Rush, Tame Impala's mm-hmm. now like fourth proper album, is that while, and we'll get to this a little bit later, because there's an argument about the Tame Impala kind of evolution, if you will, but Breathe Deeper represents the microcosm of the Slow Rush and being an album that Tame Impala himself says is inspired almost by the rush of MDMA, Ecstasy, Molly, those kind of like club party drugs. Breathe Deeper, he even described in an interview as like being his first time taking MDMA and all of those sorts of feelings. A lot of this album has a lot of a aura of reminiscing, as though you're remembering a previous time in your life and trying to vividly remember and put that back together in your memory, which is something we all do. We fawn over the past and over-romanticize
it. Yeah, it's
and this is kind of a sonic version of it. But with Breathe Deeper, you see something that Tame Impala has like flirted with but hasn't really jumped into, which is just like doing dance electronic,
yes,
along with his own unique brand of alternative rock. And it's so fucking good.
Like, and the cool
it's
thing
an
is
instant Breathe, banger. It's such a like, thank God the song came out on February 14th. I'm sure it made a lot of couples very happy out there and will in the future.
Definitely will in the future.
It's a fantastic, phenomenal song. And
but the cool thing with Breathe Deeper is 6 minutes long, and it's one of those songs that's two songs in one. Because about the 4:30 mark of the track, it turns off and it becomes something else completely. And I remember listening to it, I'm like, oh, there's a new song. I'm like, wait, no, it's still Breathe Deeper. I'm like, this is cool. And it like peers off, but still is one complete track while being two different things in the track. Because it's very, very, very hard to do that.
I did the same with Posthumous Forgiveness, which was previously, as I think I mentioned in the Tame Impala bonus episode, as was my favorite pre-album single to be released and come out, because it had this two-parter thing. And it was, Posthumous Forgiveness, the idea of forgiving someone that is no longer able to communicate to you. Obviously, the song gives it away as posthumous, but it could be applied to in many of other things. But Tame Impala retains that musical depth of being able to write two songs in one that flow very well together and would be hard to kind of put together and beat against each other. But at Breathe Deeper, we're only like five songs into this 57-minute album, and it's already coming in so hot. You could have stopped it there as an EP, and it would have been one of the releases of the year.
Easily. Then you get Tomorrow's Dust, which is fantastic. It has a little end of Tomorrow's Dust where it goes back to Breathe Deeper, that little ending bit of somebody talking, which is pretty cool.
It sounds like you're in the bathroom of a club.
I love that effect.
Allegedly, people on Molly can relate to the experience of being like escaping the dance floor for a little bit to take a little breather or whatever as you're kind of coming down on one of your rolling periods, allegedly, as sources have told me. But then that gets to On Track, which is this really kind of introspective, slower song that breaks up the poppy disco sort of funk groove aspect of the earlier half with something that's very introspective, deep. Kind of the classic, almost trippy Tame Impala that you're used to listening to, with certain differences and certain evolutions, which again we'll get to in a moment.
Lost in Yesterday is another one of the tracks that he released. This one he released in January, so that was the last one of the singles, because there's only three singles. Speaking of that, the single he released in March of last year, Patience, did not make it onto the album, which is very interesting to me, because I really liked Patience, but coming back to the album, I didn't think it actually would fit compared to it, because the rest of the album is so much more of a groove dance kind of reminiscing album, and I don't think Patience would have fit on it, so I'm actually glad he didn't, even though I really like that track. Is It True is fantastic. It Might Be Time, which is my favorite of the singles that he did release. Oh my god, that track is ridiculous, especially when you get about halfway through, about the 2 minute mark of It Might Be Time, where it's just, you have the entire band playing through that song, and it just has that little synthesizer part, plus his vocals, and just the drums, everything about that. I really like the keyboard work of it too.
It reminds me of Glitter Freeze on steroids, the Gorillaz song from Plastic Beach, because of the part where it's like,
it's definitely strange, but that's why I like it. You have Glimmer, which is hilarious, because there's a 2 minute little piece, but it goes like the first 20 seconds is an interview with Kevin. He's like, yeah, and to people always say, you got to make the bass better, you got to turn up the bass, but no.
To make the kick drum better, you got to turn up the bass,
he's
but
like,
no.
And then he goes into this straight dance hall.
Straight to the song.
Straight dance. I was like, yes. Yeah. I want someone to remix it and make it like 17 minutes long. And then One More Hour is a perfect, perfect, perfect ending track for this album. It wraps it up. I love how that starts off with One More Year and then it ends with One More Hour. That is such a good complimentary thing. And two, you can listen to it on its own, and it's a great track. Because there's a lot of things where you make a very good ending of an album, but it's hard to listen to without either a song before it or at the end of an entire album, because it only fits in that regard. This song can go by itself with it too. It's 7 minutes long, and it just kind of reflects upon a lot of things in life, a lot of different things within the album itself that were already discussed. And yeah, this is...
It's that reflective sort of quality that we had talked about with it earlier.
This is insanely good of an album.
It's properly great.
Like, Christ.
It's one of those few albums that I was able to review listening all the way through without some sort of like kind of pyromaniac Sean over here.
I was surprised there was juice in it, that's all.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of albums where very rarely can I review an album and listen to it and I don't like raise my eyebrow at least one song or like want to. I don't skip songs when I'm reviewing albums, especially for this podcast. God, would I never. I do honestly try to listen to every song, even albums that I hate, all the way through, unless I can't, in which case I'll very transparently tell
them. Then we'll say we can't.
Yes, but It was a very easy listen to play all the way through. I played it at a party. I played it at like in driving through my car. Mm-hmm. It was just really great. It's a really phenomenal album, and I think like there's surprises and hidden things here and there for Tame Impala and
this,
fans.
This is my favorite Tame Impala album by far. I really like Currents, this to me is so much more complete of an album.
I will give it some time. There are aspects of Currents that I like a lot more than this, and there are aspects of this that I like a little bit more than Currents. I will concede to you that at least in my, having listened to this only about 7 times, that as an album, this feels more complete. But there are certain songs and certain explorations that I felt in Currents that I feel a little bit better. And so Tame Impala is like really not universally liked, but liked by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But one sort of larger aspect of it is that a lot of Tame Impala fans from the earlier years, as we kind of talked about in the bonus episodes I keep referencing, from Inner Speaker mm-hmm. and all those other earlier things, missed the Tame Impala of old, who was a little bit more psychedelic rock and right. really infused in the realm of psychedelic rock. He talked about this in an interview with The Fader, actually, about a lot of fans feeling like he's left his psychedelic rock roots to explore alternative rock and experimental, and at least in this point now, electronic music and dance and synth pop. And he was asked if he ever felt the need to go back to the psychedelic style of music mm-hmm. as like a core thing. And he said, in a typical Tame Impala fashion, "Not at the moment. It would be exciting making music for me. I do it because it's exciting. I get excited by the idea of making music that's something I haven't done before. That's where joy of creativity comes from. If I did more psych rock again," I added more in there, but mm-hmm. if I did psych rock again as the way that people know that I do psych rock, you'd be able to hear that it wasn't me testing the boundaries. You'd be able to hear that it was something I already know how to do. I wouldn't want to give people something uninspired, even if they want to think about it." That's Audio Face.
That's yep. Boom. That's right there. That's us.
Because like I very much agree and hear out the people who are Tame Impala fans who really like that psychedelic aspect that he used to did. But the thing is that you have
change
to
change your shit. You got to evolve as an artist.
Yeah, look from a higher level of music and say that okay, as a musician, you might get bored of the stuff you did. You obviously, as a musician, would expect that musician to put forward their best work.
Mm-hmm.
And not like keep trying to do that best work, otherwise they get tired and kind of lost in the same thing. There are other artists who will definitely, I mean definitely, copy and be inspired by mm-hmm. early Tame Impala, and they'll make their own shit that's very good. I think Dan Deacon, I think is his name, but another artist who's like kind of been popping up in the psychedelic rock scene, kind of inspired by Tame Impala, mm-hmm. but like doing his own thing more closer to psychedelic rock. And I think that's awesome. But I also don't agree with people who feel that their artists should be siloed by their best or oldest work. I think of the best bands that we've talked about on Audio Face, and some of the things that we rank about artists mm-hmm. is when they are able to break out of their old mold and do something that feels creatively inspiring to them. Two more notes from this interview because I thought it was interesting. He got a lot of influence from on this album from Travis Scott and the producer, another one, the producer of Travis Scott's Astroworld, whose name is escaping me right now, but Mike Dean. Mm-hmm. And he worked with them on something, and he said, Tame Impala said, "Working with Mike Dean and Travis Scott was pretty inspiring because it made me see the big picture of what I was doing. These guys just focus on the quality that they're trying to get, and they don't sweat the small stuff." And there's a middle ground between Sean might say, "Hey, sweat some of the smaller stuff some more, because that'll be attention to detail that might make your music better, Travis Scott." My 100%. Opinion on this, which I understand Sean's opinion, but my opinion on this is that Travis Scott did, in not focusing so much on the details, he was still able to bring the most experimental trap music album to trap music in the year it came out, and it was a hit. And there are a bunch of people who don't fully understand the fundamentals of experimental music or rock or dance mm-hmm. or whatever the things that Astroworld dabbled into, but they fucking love Astroworld, and that's the first step, honestly. So I definitely see both sides to it. To all the people who say Tame Impala has changed, he's not like the old shit, you're right. But respect Tame Impala for the fact that he's making new music, he's trying really hard, and the ultimate thing we have to say is that he made a damn good album while doing it.
Arbitrary Scale is golf courses that the PGA Tour plays on. Because yes. We were just at Riviera yesterday, so...
Allegedly.
You know, we got a shout-out to the White Man's Game.
Yes. I was looking at a Forbes list, how you know you've totally sold out. I saw TPC Sawgrass, and you were talking about it too. It looks really amazing.
Well, TPC Sawgrass is one of my favorite courses. That's where the Players' Championship is held every single year, especially that par 3 on 17 where you have just the green is in the middle of a lake, and you're like, if you miss, you're fucked.
Yeah, yeah, you're not getting that ball back.
No, and it's hilarious the amount of tour pros that hit it on the green, and it rolls down. And it rolls into the water. It's like, it happens all the time. I gotta, when it happens in March, I think it's the Players, I'll be watching it a little bit because it's hilarious when that shit happens. And then you'll see who the really good guys are because they'll hit it like 3 feet in the pin and the ball just stops. You're like, how? I would hit that shit in the water immediately.
Fucking Rory McIlroy hitting targets from 500 feet across the other side of the green.
Right, dude is ridiculous.
Very good album. Highly recommend it.
Mine is Augusta National, which is the best golf course ever made by man.
Blessed three times.
Played, blessed three times. Jesus himself. Yeah. This is up there of ridiculously good albums. And it's going to be interesting to see how this ages for me. All right. Now we're going to go into some news. Rage Against the Machine are doing a tour. They reunited. They settle the differences of anarchy and Marxism because they're friends. And how many of us have them? And they're trying to beat Scalpers, which are the fucking scum of the face of the earth, who fuck all them. Need to rot in Tudor England jails cells in the tower.
And before or after to get public hang?
Oh, after it went, and they get hang drawn and quartered and pissed on.
Oh yes, the holy trinity of British justice: hang, drawn, and quartered.
Or my personal favorite was when they just hang outside a cage and they get their eyes gouged out and they just wait for crows to pick them off and die that way. That's how scalpers should die.
I'm telling you, the English are into some medieval shit. Like they were.
I mean, yeah.
We're not doing so well in this generation, but like we're into some medieval shit. Anyways, Rage Against the Machine announced they're coming back. They announced their comeback tour. Run the Jewels is going to be opening for them in most cities. That's going to be super lit, super woke. But of course, the issue when you're a musician who's going to release a really big concert tour is the fucking scalpers. So Rage Against the Machine's plans to beat scalpers, which we talked about artists doing in kind of a smaller way before, but here's like
this
another
is cool.
Big test. Is where on Ticketmaster and on their website, Rage Against the Machine released regular tickets, followed by tickets that were priced slightly higher than the regular price. But the same price would be available if you just signed on all across stadium. So the nosebleeds and the front row seats would be about the same inflated price. When Rage Against the Machine charges inflated prices, they donate the rest of the inflated price money to charities and organizations that help. Yeah.
Yeah. All of the fees and shit you get when you buy tickets nowadays, they're giving it all to charities and activist organizations in each city, which is woke as fuck.
Yeah. For the first couple of cities, Rage Against the Machine already talked about donating them to causes for their El Paso, Texas, Las Cruces, New Mexico, and Glendale, Arizona shows.
It's immigrant rights.
They're going to immigrant rights organizations. So
they haven't said which ones yet, but. Yeah,
but Rage Against the Machine, they're like from their music to their actions, they're pretty through and through with what they do. The interesting thing about this is that it's this idea where the artists decide to play around, do some funny money with the ticket pricing. We've talked about this with Taylor Swift, we've talked about this with Ticketmaster for the entire time of audio.
Taylor Swift tickets are ridiculously bad.
But it's interesting to see how this worked. And I'm quoting from Rolling Stone here. Shout out to John Blistein for writing this article. But says that while there were complaints from fans about the high price of scalp tickets, there are also some complaints about the $125 baseline price, but the price was applied to all seats, so it was fairly equal. And Rage's plan to drive down ticket scalpers is apparently working at the moment, at the time of writing, which may be a couple days ago, is the time you're listening to this. Tickets for Section F at the August 11th Madison Square Garden in New York show were $731 on Ticketmaster. While on StubHub, the same section for the same show, tickets are selling for $279.
And there you go.
Similarly, a nosebleed seat was priced at $331 on Ticketmaster while being $138 for StubHub. So the issue is that the scalpers are now having to undercut their tickets way closer to the original price, which is around $100, $120 to give people regular seats. So the scalpers end up not making as much money. Mm-hmm. And the people who do end up buying... like what, the $731 floor seats, $600 of that is going to go towards an immigrant rights organization or a charity. So
yeah, I guess they raised $3 million. They raised $3 million and stopped 85% of ticket scalpers.
Yeah,
that's what like the numbers are so far.
Yeah, that was according to what Tom Morello's self reported. But no, this seems pretty interesting. It's talked about this before, where
especially if you're a band, like activist band, especially, I think this is a great move for you to do because you preach what you do what you preach.
Yeah, which you truly live your politics.
Exactly, which there's not many people that do, but the Rage Against the Machine definitely do. And it's funny because their band are like very polar opposite people in the political sphere. One's complete anarchist, one is a complete Marxist.
Yeah.
So, which is hilarious.
And it does completely make sense for that. I totally hear the argument that like, hey, $120 standard, even if they're doing a good thing, is a lot for a ticket. But like, comparatively, how prices have gone up. $250 for Radiohead tickets each.
It was actually a little less than that.
We had one. It was fees and everything, like a little under $200.
Yeah, it was just under $200. But if you go to a really big name like Taylor Swift concert, I was actually looking at the
stadium shows. Yeah,
yeah, because they're opening up the new arena in LA, and she's opening it up. It is ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
Like the nosebleeds themselves are like $250. Well, that's insane. That's not right.
Yeah. People.
So the 1975, they promised to only play gender balanced music festivals. So Maddie was saying on Twitter,
this is a response to the Reading Leeds Festival.
I was about to say that. Sorry. Because of he was saying that the lack of diversity in music booking has been a long problem. And that they, as a band, they are determined to do something about it. So especially with what happened at Reading and Leeds, where the predominant of the main attractions were all male-led, either bands or acts, they said that now they want it to be even, where they're going to put a condition into it where it says that they only play festivals that commit to X percent, ideally 50%, acts that include women and non-binary performers is what he was saying. So this is interesting to say because this is, it's definitely happened in music throughout the history of shit, especially in the modern age.
And music is no different from the rest of society in that it tends to be male dominated when it starts.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's because the main thing now for me too is that there's so many great female acts that are going on that they can definitely be represented in headline festivals. Actually, I think, even though we don't like her music per se, Taylor Swift is headlining Glastonbury.
Hmm.
I believe, because I was saying at the NME Awards, I'm pretty sure she's headlining Glastonbury, one of the headliners for Glastonbury.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, for this year. So something like that, that's awesome to see, because as a female performer playing in, an American female playing at one of the biggest festivals in the world, not just in England and in Europe in general, but to say, okay, cool, this is something that's going to help change things. And a band now that is gaining traction and notoriety as big as the 1975 are becoming, it's nice to see that they are doing something. Because again, like we were saying with Rage Against the Machine, live your politics. Live something that you believe and care about. And that's definitely what Maddie and the boys do. And they preach their politics, which is
cool. Live and preach it. So. In 2017, BBC Research did a survey, and they found that 7 out of 10 artists on the UK's like top festival bills were men or all male bands. That's like more than 70%. And Pitchfork found that 3/4 of all artists booked across the 23 biggest summer festivals were men or all male bands. So it seems like there's this like, you know, women are give or take about 51-55% of the population in the world. Yet men are about 75 or more percent of the artists that end up in festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like it's a tough thing because in many parts of society, I really mean to not like imply anything about like women or anything in the statement, but like in many parts of society, the men just seem to get to stature first, at least in my personal experience, because they just have the lack of awareness or awareness to believe that if they assert themselves enough, they will be kind of more prominently placed and put out there. And so because of that, you get this kind of weird phenomena where men get overrepresented in media and in music and in music relations than women do, unnecessarily and incorrectly. It's not like there's some like, oh, we can definitely find out that men are more talented than women in music, or just patently false.
You can both be good and both suck.
Yeah, so it just kind of matters down to are these festival promoters figuring out, do we have women musicians that are good this year? The answer is extremely yes. Do we have women musicians who want to get paid to perform at a music festival? Sure. That answer is extremely yes. And so then it's about, kind of connecting points A to B, making sure you reach out to the female musicians and book them properly and pay them properly so that they get to be a part of these festivals. And also it mentions non-binary positions, musicians. So folks who don't fall into the gender binary can also perform and be out there, because what we've done on Audioface, not always perfectly, but we've really honestly tried, is to make sure that we cover a number of artists who are a good mix of what's popular that week, who's different that week, and mm-hmm. also who represents differentness. So if there's women, if there's people of color, if there's non-binary people, we talk about them and we try to put them on the show pretty subtly. We don't really talk about their identities so much, unless it bleeds into their music, because it's just music. We're a music reviewing podcast.
I don't give
podcast.
A fuck what you are. I'm going to say you suck, you suck. If you're good, you're good.
Yeah. And so...
how simple it is.
As often happens on this podcast, we're projecting our morals onto the music world, but we generally think our morals would be a step in the right direction, a bigger step in the right direction than a lot of these places seem to be taking. But it's good that the 1975 and a number of other bands, to their credit, are signing on, and in addition to festival promoters as well, are signing on to this pledge. Key Change, which is an initiative from the PRS Foundation. I'm not quite sure what PRS stands for.
I have no idea what the fuck it stands for.
They are signing on to make sure that festivals achieve a 50-50 gender balance by 2020. To make sure that, like, you have just as many women artists as you do male artists. And I think that'll be fine. It's not going to decrease sales.
And it's also, there's going to be festivals that are going to be more female-orientated than male, and vice versa. So it's going to naturally happen just by the amount of acts and who's popular that year as well. But it shouldn't be such a giant discrepancy.
Yeah.
It'd be like 60-40, that's fine. Or it could be something around that range. But if when it gets to be more than like 3/4 of it, then that's sort of like, okay, that's a bit
That's
much.
When it's like, okay, so. you as a concert promoter and producer should be trying a little bit harder to find the vast pool, more vast than any time ever in history, pool of excellent women and non-binary artists that exist out there who are ready to play for money for audiences who will gladly pay for them. So it's good that a band like the 1975, big and up and coming, is taking a step. Hopefully other bands follow suit and other promoters follow suit. But we go into our second and last album of the day.
Yes.
Baby Gravy 2 by Young Gravy and Baby No Money. BB No Dollar Sign.
Oh god, this is... I hate that writing so much.
It's 10 songs,
25 minutes. It's a fun little... trap album
it's a
thing.
Fun little drop.
Like it's cool, it's different, I guess. Well, I wouldn't say it's too different, but just hilarious with the lyrics. Like Bandsville is funny.
Yeah, Young Gravy is a very popular for being like a comedic sort of rapper, or having that sort of style. And Baby No Money is a Canadian rapper who is very much a good compliment to Young Gravy.
No, they definitely go well together for sure. They both, yeah, their voices complement each other, their styles, their flows complement each other. Even for one that's has a little more serious tone than the other, they still both drop it as a like a comedic fun album compared to what so much of trap is being right now, where it's super serious and I wouldn't say comical, but to me comical in a way of this is just getting ridiculous of how samezies it is. But this is a little fun. It's a little nice drop.
Every trap album tries to like over flex. The fact that it's rappers, like, does gang shit, secures the bag, like kills the ops, does all this different, like, these tropes and shit that, like, it's fine, we like it, we bopped this music, but it's nice to see music as an art being twisted in a certain different ways that are, like, used to be more entertaining. Like, with songs like Justin Bieber Wrist and Go Bananas, like, there's just fun shit that's poking fun at pop culture, poking fun at the hokiness of two white trap rappers. But not just poking fun at that as a gimmick, because I think Young Gravy has like kind of made his career off of that and songs like Mr. Clean and stuff like that, but also kind of pushing that forward sonically in songs. I don't know if you heard Welcome to Chili's, but it was a single that had come out before, and it's one of several songs in this album that starts to instrument with mixing trap undertones and beats with new things.
Baby, no So she got that booty popping like it's bubble gum gum. Beat up on that booty like rumpa pom pom. Will not listen to your bullshit, nah 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 nah. Baby gravy dropping heat that rat ta ta ta. Blow yo bitch a little Cavassier. Yoko Ono came through with the yay. Romo blunts up, baby underlay. Let's get lit like it's a holiday. Hey, gravy.
Hey, baby.
What's good, bitch?
Every day I wake up and I'm back on my bullshit.
How come every time I say a word?
This had like a bit, like a sort of Latin-inspired guitar.
Yeah, that really one. Fun. Yeah, that was different for sure. I remember listening to that. I'm like, oh, okay, that's... It's kind of like, shit, what's that song that on 21's album last year?
Out for the Night.
Out for the Night. It's like that, where he put Santana into it. It's like that. And I love... That's one of my favorite things that's coming more into trap is Latin-infused trap, where you have either a Latin guitar, Latin drum, something like that. That's a really nice, it complements it very well. So I want more people to do that. Don't do every fucking song like that, but it's nice to have that into it.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It's different. You know, it's cool.
Yeah, if you're coming to this album, you like have a passing understanding, definitely likeness of trap, but you also want to see like almost an... Not quite Eminem level as far as like lyrical dexterity and style, but like an Eminem style disregard for the traditional ideas of what rap is supposed to be and what trap is supposed to be. Like, this guy is fundamentally a comedian who raps well. And Young Gravy, because I have more experience with Young Gravy rather than Baby No Money, who Baby No Money's raps are really good. And the collaborations on here with like Sparkmaster Tape, Trippy the Kid are also pretty nice, but also pretty pared down, so it doesn't overpower the album. But Young Gravy is also just getting better at fundamentally rapping, because even in Mr. Clean, there are parts of his rap that didn't fully match the beat. Whereas this, it's clean, it's precise, it's produced very well and tightly, so that you don't get distracted from the jokey aspects of it. Songs like I Don't Know, or my favorite, which is at the end, Shining on My Ex, which does this half trap thing, half like dance whatever thing in the middle. He's like, oh, I hope the song doesn't go viral on TikTok.
Yeah.
That's a bet, Lil Chet, lavish net, yeah, shining on my ass, yes, next, huh, shining on my ass, yeah, it's next, bitch, shining on my ass, yeah, it's next.
Off the triple sex, stunting on my ex, getting PMB, rock type neck, that ain't a weird flex, shining on my ex, yeah, it's next, bitch, shining on my ex, yeah, it's next, bitch.
Dude, I'd be pissed off if this song blew up on TikTok. I just got 100 trip to shit, then I whip quick. That's all on my wrist, I'll be trying to lick. You looking like some plat, I'm a toothpick. Money feeling exponential, glad I'm mathematic. Flip a bag, I'm back.
But it's like kind of asking for the song to go viral on TikTok, because it's just really fun and pretty and kind of like very danceable.
Yeah.
Which is not what you'd expect. Like, trap songs are danceable in a certain way, but this goes from like trap dancing to like middle of an EDM club dancing, kind of like wilding out and shit, doing your own thing. It's that free flowing kind of craziness that kind of brings people towards Young Gravy's music, and I think this more than delivers the Baby Gravy 2 project.
So that would be, for our arbitrary scale, that would be Torrey Pines South Course, which is in San Diego. I've played that course. Nice course. You have, it's always at the beginning of the year when they are on the during the PGA Tour season. You have a beautiful view of the beach.
The Farmers Insurance Open.
It's fun. Yeah, the Farmers Insurance Open. Yep.
We are farmers.
And there you go.
We don't get paid for that. Dun, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum.
So okay. The Enemy Awards happen, and there's a lot of shit, I guess.
The Enemy.
Yes. So Slow Ty did some gain shit, and... He told an audience member that they ruined his speech and they threw a glass in a crowd. He threw glass into the crowd and he tried to start a fight because, you know, that's what you do at fucking music awards.
By the way, Slow Ty was being honored with Enemy's Hero of the Year award, an already moronic award that's given all the time.
Yeah, which is fucking stupid.
Enemy is so annoying. Enemy is like Enemy is the Pitchfork of England. I'm not afraid to say that.
I mean, yeah, that's why they called The Enemy. It's just, it's hilarious. You can find the video, and it's a nice little comedic thing for your week, and he apologized for it because he's a fucking dumbass.
Yeah, he's eventually, so it was apparently Slow Ty's explanation after being escorted off of the stage. Mm-hmm. Usually you have music play you out to tell you to get the fuck out. You don't have security bring you off of the stage.
Yeah, security's got to bring you off when you throw shit into
the stage. He said, Enemy, please forward my award to Catherine boom, whatever. For she is the hero of the year. What started as a joke between us escalated to a point of shameful actions on my part. Oh, I want to reservedly apologize. There's no excuse for being sorry. I'm not a hero. Catherine, you're a master of your craft. And next time I'll take my seat and leave the comedy to you, to any woman or to man who saw a reflection of situations they've been in those videos. I'm sorry. I promise to do better. Let's talk here. So again, I'm going to be unlike most social justice warriors on the internet and reward apologies that seem and feel heartfelt, even though they come after fuck-ups that are pretty large.
It's pretty funny.
It just seems like some old-fashioned, just like United Kingdom shit. Like, you know, you get a little too excited at a party, you get drunk, glass gets thrown. You know, happens.
So SoundCloud, they announced a $75 million investment from SiriusXM. I guess that they're purchasing, Sirius is purchasing a minority stake in SoundCloud.
And two seats on the board. That'll be important later.
All right. They want to use the cash to accelerate to product development and enhance the services that fuel its global community of creators and listeners. Basically just making their service a little bit more, I guess, and to make the app not suck.
Yeah, SoundCloud has...
But granted, I use SoundCloud a lot. I do genuinely like it, but there is a lot of issues, and we've talked about that in...
Yeah.
A lot of different audio faces.
And SoundCloud is a major hub for new music being created and all of the cool stuff that happens in music. So it's good that, I mean, like, we've said that SoundCloud was probably not going to make it through the year. I definitely said that in a past audio face episode.
Definitely did.
And it would have been true had SiriusXM not bought this, because in 2017, they received a $170 million rescue investment. After they had a bunch of closures and layoffs that definitely devastated the future of the company. So it still exists. It still can thankfully be this great ecosystem for up-and-coming artists looking to put their shit out there.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's important because, unfortunately, Spotify and Apple Music still have some barriers for, like, regular music to be created. Some of them right, some of them not right, but it stifles creativity in a way that SoundCloud does not. So it's good, ultimately, for the music ecosystem that SoundCloud exists. That being said, it's a terrible app. It's a horrible user experience. And hopefully... Maybe this small round of money can help them turn around to a right direction. But you also need good management to do that. And no amount of money will fix good or bad management.
And the last story, which is hilarious. You always like to end out of your face on a fun note. Even though these two stories are a fun note too. Is Drake signs a multi-year partnership with a live streaming platform called Caffeine.
Caffeine. I've never heard of that before. What is Caffeine?
It's a live streaming thing for fucking rappers.
Apparently, Drake signed a multi-year agreement for the platform, and also he'll be the first act to bring the Ultimate Rap League, literally, aka URL, which I thought had to do with like regular internet shit.
Me too, but it is literally a streaming service just to see rappers talk shit on each other. So I hope somebody throws some Hennessy bottles, I hope people get arrested, and I want to see some fights and chairs thrown.
I hope Drake's second kid gets announced on Caffeine.
I'm super down for Drake to have a second kid. Want to have a daughter that he doesn't pay child support for.
Totally likely. Drake had a really good time because he participated in Ninja's stream back when Ninja was back on Twitch and before Ninja got bought out by Microsoft Mixer.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
It had 635,000 concurrent viewers at its peak. So Drake is definitely seeing that he can flex live streaming experience on other platforms. Other platforms definitely want to pull that attention away from Twitch and YouTube and those.
Oh, likes. For so, sure, because the amount of viewers that Twitch gets is huge compared to other ones, and that's why they always try to get big name artists or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see. It's really dumb and stupid, but it's gonna be hilarious, and I hope people get into fights, and I want that shit. I want to see that shit while I'm eating popcorn in the comfortability of my couch.
I mean,
because that is the world we live in 2020.
That's what live streaming is all about, folks.
And this has been Audio Face.
This has been Audio Face.
Thank you for listening to us. Do I need to plug us in again, or did you already plug us in? To play us out?
Let's play us out. What does it mean to play us
what
out?
What does it mean? Okay, well, we have the things on the social medias. At Audio Face Pod is all the social medias where you can find us, follow us. You can see all the updates. We tell you when we post shit and everything
and
else.
And please tell us and what music you want us to review or listen to.
Or if you are listening, indeed, please tell us.
Hello! Anybody? Is anybody there? Sean can be found on Twitter
and Instagram at SWSuarez, Dan from the web on Twitter, and Dan from the internet on Instagram, and that has been Audio Face. Thank you for listening to us.
Talk to you
we
next
will
week.
Have stuff for you next week, as always. Bye.